Now, the voices of Bronco Athletics, Bob Beeler and Chris Lewis on Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.
Welcome to a Tuesday edition. Yesterday, for a baseball fan, four straight games, starting during this show and running till almost midnight Mountain Time. Four baseball games. Some had more drama than others. Some had better decisions made than others. But postseason baseball, Chris, not really that similar to regular season baseball. And I think a lot of it is just simple math. One out of five games makes things a lot more magnified and a lot more exciting than one out of 162 games.
Yeah, it was October Madness at its best. When you have games on from, you know, the time you're getting lunch until the time you go to bed. Yeah, that's October Madness.
Reminded me of the first round of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. That's why I made the part of March Madness. But if you missed the connection there.
I did miss the connection.
Anyway, every time I watch baseball, the playoffs, I look at it from an angle that I don't really watch any other sport by. And it's, man, if I was a fan of one of these teams, it would be so agonizing. To the point where, like, I almost feel like we need to somehow get the intensity and the urgency that is in the baseball playoffs and somehow find a way to squeeze it in the regular season. I don't know if there's a way to possibly do it because the regular season is 1-162. Even if you take my idea and divide the season into halves and give the halfway winners a spot in the playoffs, you're still not capturing the urgency that you're getting in these games. But it's so fun. But yet, I can imagine as a Yankees fan, and there's tons of them around this area and around the country, like, being a Yankees fan during these games has to be like you're losing years off your life. You're pulling your hair out of your head, or if you're you and you don't have that much hair, I don't know what you do. Do you bite your nails? Is that what you do?
No, I usually bite my nails.
Okay. I'm just trying to come
my
up
with this. My wife was intense last night. Yeah, my wife is a huge Yankee fan.
That's right.
And by that, I have decided to join the Yankees because in 2014, first year she lived here, she joined me with the Giants. But you're right. There is something when it's your team. But one of the things I think makes baseball special, makes it different than any of the other major sports, you take somebody out of the game, you can't bring them back. Basketball, if you decide you want to bring somebody for a matchup, and you want to bring them back in later in the game, you can do it. Football, you got two platoons. Hockey, they change lines all the time. You take a goalie out, he's not hot, you put him in, you can bring the goalie back again. But baseball, if you want to take somebody out of the game because they run better than somebody else or don't run as well, or you decide you want the left-handed pitcher instead of the right-handed pitcher, that person is gone for the rest of the game.
You're committed to it, which is what leads me to one of my favorite parts about the baseball postseason. It's Bob puts the managers on fire, hands out the grades, good moves, bad moves. Who should be dumped as a manager? Who has no idea what they're doing? Who's the genius among the bunch? So we had four games yesterday. That's a big sample size of managerial decisions. So what stood out?
Well, I think what stood out was how teams use their pitching staffs. And I'll start with the Washington-Chicago game. You have Max Scherzer, who might win the Cy Young Award in the National League this year, coming off an injury. In his last regular season game, he injured his right hamstring. And they had said that they had planned on using him around 100 pitches.
Mm-hmm.
They get to 98 pitches, and he gives up his first hit of the game in the seventh inning. One hit. Now, not a lot of wiggle room. He's ahead 1-0. And they opt, Dusty Baker and the Nationals Brain Trust, opt to take him out because of a left-hand hitter, Scherzer, coming to the plate. He's out of the game. They go to Sammy Solis. And it doesn't work out well. They give up the tying run, then eventually the...
He has an ERA of 5.88, and if I'm correct, not only that, Joe Maddon countered with a different hitter when they brought in a different pitcher.
You can almost always expect late in the game, unless somebody is like Bird, lefty against Miller, when he got the home run, rare home run against the lefty. If you come in and you want to go with your lefty against their lefty, you've got to think maybe they're going to send up some righty to hit against your lefty. Now, if I'm Washington and I have a chance to play a key game 3 where somebody's going to take a 2-1 lead, do I want Max Scherzer throwing that pitch for me? Or do I want Sammy Solis throwing that pitch for me? Now, a few years ago, maybe that was the thing that the Dodgers were sort of skewered over. Mm-hmm. They left Clayton Kershaw in too long. We'll never know because we don't know whether Scherzer would have gotten Schwarber out or not. But I think that I kind of want my best guy in there when the thing's on the line.
Even if it's against their better hitter in the favorable righty-lefty matchup, the way he was pitching. And again, you have to read the game, too. And now, I don't know how hard of a line this pitch count was. Like, if it really was, the medical staff said, like, he can't go over 100 pitches no matter what, then you're kind of, your hands played. You really don't have that much flexibility. But from reading the post-game quotes, it doesn't sound like that was the number one factor in the decision.
And he was also mad when he got taken out of the game. Now, a lot of pitchers are mad when they got taken out. Now, also, if I'm Washington, I'm upset that I kind of followed in the other Beltway area team's play from last year. Sean Doolittle or Ryan Madsen did not come to the mound in the game, and those are your two best relievers.
How do you lose a close game and not have those guys there? Especially that position where you don't know if the seventh inning, the eighth inning, the sixth inning could be the key inning. The seventh inning could be the key inning. So to save those guys when there's a base running threat in a close game to not use them, you could always be criticized for that move. And with Dusty Baker, I believe he doesn't have a year left on his contract after this year. He doesn't have a guarantee for 2018. You know his history about it as well as anybody does of regular season success without a lot of postseason success. I love one of his quotes after the game because who was it? Rizzo, who got the game-winning hit for Chicago, and he kind of blooped it in there. And Dusty Baker was asked about, you know, how Anthony Rizzo, he always seems to get big hits. It's like, yeah, he really stepped up there. He blooped that thing in. He was basically saying he didn't hit it hard. He didn't really step up and deliver a hard hit line drive somewhere. It was a bloop. And that's the randomness of the postseason and what he was hinting at, is that it was a good pitch. He didn't get good contact on the ball, and it happened to be blooped in there for the game-winning hit. There's not much you can do, and it goes to show you the randomness of the sport of baseball. But for Dusty Baker, why does he always seem to be ending up on the negative end of the randomness than the positive end of the randomness? And that's something that you're very familiar with as a Giants
fan. Yeah, I mean, he had several in the World Series in 02, in a playoff game in 01. I mean, it just seems like he went against the book on a couple things. And I'm not saying you want to go with the book all the time, but you got to sometimes look at your stats, look at your people, and manage. One of the key plays in the Yankees game last night was a base running decision. And that's not a manager's decision, but that's a third base coach's decision. The Yankees got a run, an extra run, when Todd Frazier, who was not a fast runner, tagged up on a very high, fairly shallow fly ball. Made the Indians made the play. Base running, little things to me make a difference. And Chris, I know you and I disagree on this. Point I'm going to make, and I'm going to pull all the managers on notice for this, not enough sacrifice, not enough small ball. Indians, Yankees, Cubs, Nationals, Diamondbacks, 5 out of the 8 teams in this division series are not hitting 200 as a team. Getting ahead is crucial. You score first, you're 10-4 in this round. Home teams are 11-3 in this round. I think you've got to think that most of these games, with the exception of the Boston-Houston series, are going to be low scoring. The best pitchers are going to pitch. And I don't think people play for one run enough.
I'm almost seeing a different postseason than what the numbers say, because I'm seeing a lot of leads changes, a lot of high scoring first innings, and then the other team could have a high scoring first inning. Like, I'm seeing a lot of crazy swings each way. Now, maybe that's a certain number of the games, and the other ones are these low scoring, you know, 2-1 contests, and we saw a couple of those yesterday. But the math tells you, giving up an out, especially early on in the game, you're less likely to maximize your run total if you're going to give up outs. And
but I don't believe in the postseason it's the same game.
Because of the fact that you can have Chris Sale versus Justin Verlander out of the bullpen.
Every time. Every time. You can put in whoever you want. There's all these off days. I think sometimes the weather gets cold. It's harder to hit. Ball doesn't travel as good, although we have seen quite a few home runs in the postseason this year. I just look at getting runs. Like, if you could have stolen another run in that National Cubs series, one of those teams would have been in much better shape. Now, the Cubs probably didn't have a chance because they were no hit until the seventh inning against Washington. But maybe Washington could have found some other run along the way.
Yeah, maybe we need a new book, because like I can point to numbers over the large sample size of the game of baseball that has been played for such a long period of time, and we've tracked these things, and like the probability numbers aren't made up. But maybe we need a separate probability chart for postseason baseball within the last 5 years. Because maybe postseason baseball within the last 5 years with the one-game wild card, the five-game series in the first round followed by the seven, it's really managed differently and the way the game is played differently. So maybe you can't rely on the numbers of a 162-game season for decades upon decades, which is what we base a lot of our probability models on. Maybe you have to have a different probability model based on the last 5 years in the baseball playoffs.
And the last point I want to make is the idea of using pitcher on short rest. If you have somebody that pitched really well, the odds of them pitching as well the second meeting in the same series, not good, and vice versa. If you haven't pitched well, you might pitch better in the next meeting. Washington tonight in Game 4 is not going to use Strasburg on short rest, and they are down. Cleveland last night was up, and they used Trevor Bauer on short rest, and it didn't work out very well for them. He got hit and got hit pretty early. Generally speaking, managing by the book, you use the guy on short rest when you're down, and you don't use the guy on short rest when you're ahead.
Seems like a strange book, though, because you can want to win the game no matter what. And as we always say, win the game in front of you. That's the most important thing
in
the baseball playoffs. You got to win game four if you're right facing game four and worry about game five when game five arrives. So there's different ways to attack each of these, and I'm just happy we got a pretty good game today with the Cubs and the Nationals squaring off in the Game 4, because I do think this has a lasting implication on, you know, Dusty Baker and how this Nationals thing will go, because he was brought in to get them to take the next step. And if they don't take the next step by winning this series against the Cubs team that has had a lot of ups and downs, this hasn't been what they've been last year, where it was almost a magic carpet ride. Nationals should feel like they had the better team. And while these games are close and the Braves are going against them, if they lose this, man, same old Washington.
You sure we got a game four? They're calling for rain in Chicago.
I don't.
If you're the Nationals, that could be huge. I think it's the Nationals'
okay.
benefit, because they can come back to Strasburg.
That's a good call.
So I think a rainout benefits the Nationals, changes the deck. They should be doing as many rain dances as possible out on the city streets of Chicago to see that game get postponed until tomorrow.
What does the rain dance look like?
I don't know. Whatever works. Whatever works. You only have until tomorrow at 4 to win $1,000. Listen today and tomorrow at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. for your chance. Just text the keyword to 62582 for your chance to win. It's KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio, The Ticket. When we come back, what does a Boise State win over San Diego State on Saturday mean? What does a loss mean? We'll discuss next when we come back on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Boise State and San Diego State coming up Saturday night, 8:30 kickoff Mountain Time. If you're going to San Diego, it will start at 7:30. Bob and Chris here on Sports Radio, The Ticket, coming up at 2:15 today. We'll hear from Ted Leitner, longtime voice of the San Diego State Aztecs. Question I want to ask him, how he compares Penny with Falk. Penny's the first guy since Falk to have six straight 100-yard seasons, 100-yard games to start a season. Tomorrow we'll hear from Tyson Maeva at 1:15. He's from San Diego, starting middle linebacker for the Broncos. Thursday at 1:15, we have Brett Rippon.
Yeah, is Donnell Pumphrey now chopped liver?
Like, over
him?
Yeah.
He was
pretty good. Compares? We can compare there, but I think Falk is generally viewed as better.
Yeah, although numbers-wise, wasn't Pumphrey better? He was a record setter.
Maybe. I don't know. I just remember Falk as being really good, really dynamic, and really good in the pros.
Pretty long in the NFL, too.
Which isn't fair, because I was talking with somebody at BYU, and I said, we were in the elevator, and they have pictures of the players there. And one of them, the biggest picture in the elevator, is Jim McMahon. And I said, who do they generally consider the best quarterback ever to play at BYU? I don't know who these people were, but they worked for, you know, either covered or worked for BYU. And then the question they said was, do you count what they did in the pros? Because if they did, Steve Young easily wins that discussion. Mm-hmm. But they said that McMahon probably is the one, but then there are others, Detmer, Bosco, you know. So maybe we're reevaluating Falk a little too much, or I am, because of what he did for the Rams and others in the NFL.
If only Pumphrey was healthy this year with the Eagles. He got that injury in the preseason. He's been on IR, but he probably would have had a shot, because it's not like anybody in their backfield stands out. So he maybe could have gotten a look. But it'll be fun to see it. But this Boise State-San Diego State game, unique in the fact that the Broncos aren't the expected favorite in this game in the Mountain West contest. That usually doesn't happen.
First time since 13 when they went to Fresno State against against Carr, and Fresno ended up winning that one by 1 point.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was barely here at the time, so for me this is a unique thing where it's like, how do you approach it from the Boise State perspective? Is it one of those rare ones in conference where you go, you don't have to win it. It's a bonus if you get it, but you don't have to win it. I just don't feel comfortable ever having that attitude for a Mountain West contest game.
It's true mathematically. If you, let's say you forfeited this game and you just decide, you know what, we're not going to go, we're going to forfeit. You still win the division if you win every other game the rest of the season. Nobody can beat you because you have the tiebreaker on everybody else in the Mountain Division. You would have one loss if you ran the table against everybody else, including the two outside the division. Mm-hmm. And the other teams in the division would have at least one loss, and you'd have the tiebreaker on them. But to me, you give yourself no room for error. You know that Colorado State, who I think most people think is the best team other than Boise State in the Mountain Division right now, they don't play San Diego State. So they're probably going to put a 3-0 on the board in the West Division crossover games.
Fair. I think there's a lot more to gain than there is to lose is probably the best way to put it out there. And I don't ever think of hearing a conference game like that for Boise State. There's a lot more to gain than there is to lose.
Everybody talks about the bullseye on the back of Boise State. I think two-time defending champs, bullseye's on San Diego State for this one. Mm-hmm. Because if San Diego State gets beat, to me the narrative is, well, you always have a great start, but you always find some way to, you know, stub your toe.
Maybe Boise State should wear South Alabama jerseys for the game. Anybody else down for that? Find a way to get their color scheme, get their jersey combination. Make them a little nervous.
That's their kryptonite.
They don't know what to do. They see a South Alabama jersey over there in San Diego.
And for those of you who don't know, they've lost two games to South Alabama in the last 2 years that have really been crippling for them.
So this is one of the chances for whether it's Rippon or if it's Madison or if it's Rowe or if it's Wilson or Monster or somebody else. I think this is one of those building type of games that if you have a big game and a road upset, quote unquote, against San Diego State, that can be like your moment, your Boise State moment. So I think that's something to look out for what if Boise State wins and it's an individual like that who has the moment. That could be their BSU moment, and it could be something that we look back on at the end of the year and say that was a swing.
Well, you look at some of the games in 14. I mean, the team that started 3-2. I thought the BYU trouncing, when I was looking back at that game, when they beat BYU 55-30 and Hedrick threw for over 400 yards and four touchdowns, I thought to me that was the defining moment in the turnaround of that Boise State football team because they did not look back after that. Mm. And I think this football team needs a victory like that to get the fans back, to galvanize the team, to play with confidence, and I think this game Saturday night can be that game.
Yeah, and I say also if they win, they easily become the favorite in the Mountain Division for the reasons that you kind of brought up. Now, how does it affect the potential rematch, right? Because I'm still thinking this is going to be the first of two meetings. Like, even if Boise State does drop it, well, they still have a path to win the Mountain, and if they win the Mountain, I'm going to assume that they play San Diego State again.
Now, if Boise State loses the game and then runs the table and wins the division, the game will almost assuredly be in San Diego because Boise State will have three losses. San Diego State might have zero. Mm-hmm. So even if they drop one more to somebody randomly, San Diego State's probably still going to have enough to be ahead of Boise State that game's in San Diego. If Boise State wins this game and runs the table and has two losses, San Diego State has one, there's a possibility that game could be here.
Now, the possibility would depend on,
well, Boise State would probably have to run the table the rest of the way.
Yeah, but isn't it have to do with rankings?
It's just the rankings,
but
correct.
But what if none of them are ranked?
I think then it goes to computer or something.
This is probably computer or something. I remember that now. If they win also, the number one thought that'll pop into my mind probably immediately after the game, if Boise State wins, my goodness, did it hurt to lose to Virginia. It'll go back to that because you'd look and you'd say, okay, you beat San Diego State in San Diego. You went to Washington State and you almost win that game, and we'll get to the top four in a minute. There's a case to be made whether Washington State somehow could sneak into our top fours, but, or Washington State, yeah, could sneak into the top four. But if you're... the season would look so much better, the optimism and the potential New Year's Six possibilities, if you didn't lose that game to Virginia.
But, you know, the way the game played out, you'd have to change a ton of stuff to turn that one into a win. You got to make one play against Washington State to turn that one into a win.
Yeah, but like,
but I understand what you're saying.
Washington State was not considered the most winnable game schedule going in. Virginia was one that,
yes,
that just the way they performed in that game, they didn't give themselves a chance to win it, and that's what's so frustrating about it. And if they were to beat San Diego State, my mind would immediately go back to that and say, my goodness, if they just would have played like Boise State in that game at home, where could this season be?
I think if this season goes well the rest of the way, I think people are going to look back on that game and just think it was a clinker. You know, it was a no-show. It just was one of those games that you just didn't perform very well. Because you're right, Washington State game, aside from a couple mistakes and you think you let it slip away, they played well that night for the most part.
Yeah, so if your only loss a few games into the year was a close loss where a lot of crazy stuff happened at the end against Washington State,
a team that's now in the top 10,
everybody would be feeling fine. But that Virginia performance, and now if they lose against San Diego State, now you're looking at a team that's 3-3 and 500 over their last, stretch of 10 to 12 games going back to last year? 3-3.
Six games.
To finish 3-3 to start
games,
this year.
Yeah.
12 games. So it is a huge difference just perception-wise between, oh, you beat San Diego State, you're in control of the Mountain West, and if you actually showed up against Virginia, you'd probably be in a spot where you could be contending for a New Year's Six versus, oh, you're 6-6 over your last 12 games. So, I mean, that's where the difference comes in if you wanted to attach large stakes to this one in the interconference game against San Diego State.
And the last thing I had written down is what happens if Boise State wins. It would probably cost the Mountain West some money.
Oh, yeah, that too.
If San Diego State then doesn't get the chance at a New Year's Six, and the American, I think, at that point would probably be battling with Troy for the spot there. Listen to the Treasure Valley Prep Rally. It's brought to you by Mountain West Bank. It's Thursdays at 4:45 on Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. Each week, a high school football coach will discuss the game of the week, so don't miss it. Mountain West Bank, love where you bank. Up next in the sports update, what NFL Pro Bowler was traded? Trades very rare in the NFL. We'll have details next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update sponsored by Wendy's. Wendy's knows what's next for the Broncos. It's the San Diego State Aztecs this Saturday. What's next for your next meal? Satisfy your hunger with the Wendy's Taco Salad. It isn't just delicious, it's deliciously different. With hearty chili, sour cream, and a side of salsa, available now at Wendy's. Well, the Adrian Peterson experiment in New Orleans has failed. It did not work out as planned. After averaging just 3 yards a carry and falling down to number 3 on the depth chart, Peterson has been traded to the Arizona Cardinals for a conditional draft pick. Cardinals, who lost David Johnson week 1, are last in the NFL in rushing yards per game at 51 yards per attempt, and they managed just 31 yards in their loss to the Eagles last week.
Now, normally you ask us for opinions, Fish.
Yes.
You're the Saints guy. What did you think they were going to get out of Peterson, and are you glad they're cutting bait right now?
I was expecting them to get more out of Peterson, and I think Sean Payton said it best and perhaps hinted at the NFL. This is why they need to do what the NBA does. The NBA has the draft and then free agency, and teams can sign what they don't draft. Mm-hmm. The Saints signed Peterson. They didn't expect to get Alvin Kamara out of Tennessee. Kamara has killed it. He has the only rushing touchdown for the Saints among all their running backs. He's second on the team in targets. They realized they didn't need Peterson, and he can't catch the ball, which is what you have to do in the Saints offense.
It's actually really funny that you brought up that point, because I think the NBA wants to do it backwards.
No, it's
they
so
want
dumb.
To do it the other way.
You can't.
Because they won't want, they want to have draft after free agency so they can draft what they don't have and that they didn't sign in free agency.
But don't you think, though, maybe they both have it backwards? Because I could see why the NFL would want to do the free agency first, where the NBA might want to do it the other way around. Because I think free agency is more important
in NBA,
yeah, than it is in the NFL. The NFL, the draft is more important, and then you basically pick up people who've been cast off by other organizations. I think they should flip.
It's funny. They both have it the wrong way. Oh, how'd that happen? But I don't think this is any surprise that it ended up like this, because we all figured that Adrian Peterson doesn't catch the ball well enough to be a Saints running back. And you need to be able to catch the ball to get a lot of snaps with the Saints. If he's on the field, they know they're going to run it. And if he's off the field, they know the tendency is more likely to be a pass. So you can't have that kind of giveaway. Never was a fit. And I think he's done.
You
it's okay.
Done?
to be done. He has a great career. He was an awesome running back back in the day. He might have been the second best running back I've ever seen, with Damian Tomlinson one, Adrian Peterson two.
I can respect that. So how many games do you think he makes with the Cardinals then?
How many games he, well, he's, like, does think he show up for?
Well, I don't think he's done. You think he's going to make
roster,
it?
But I don't think he has a 100-yard game for them the whole year.
But I don't know. Is the Cardinals aren't, with what they've had in injuries, to me it's a lost cause this year. You're not going to do anything.
They're only 2-3. They're only a game out of their division somehow.
I guess.
Without David Johnson.
Know. I just don't see that team as a viable team. They haven't looked good at all, in my opinion.
They have the oldest team in the world.
They have Carson Palmer, 85. Larry Fitzgerald,
72.
Adrian Peterson,
65.
I believe their three weapons are like a combined over 100 years old. Your stars on offense, over 100.
Yeah, they would have killed in Madden 2008.
But unfortunately, it's 2017.
They might be a little too old for 2008. We mean to go back to like Madden 2007.
This past their prime.
Well, speaking of people in their prime, I'm sure JP was excited. The Mitchell Trubisky era got off last night in Chicago to a somewhat rocky start. The game looked like a baseball game. It was 3-2 at halftime. For Trubisky ended up throwing his first touchdown pass of his career. However, it also ended with his first interception of his career late in the game on his own 25-yard line. And thanks to that pick, the Vikings walked off with a field goal. 20-17 winners in Trubisky's first game.
All right, I watched the end of this game and had one thought come to mind. One main thought. And that was right after the interception that Trubisky threw. It was a tie game with about
2 minutes left. 2:42
left. I was thinking, why doesn't Chicago let them score? Your best chance to win is to let the Vikings score, and you would have the ball back with Trubisky and your two timeouts to go with about like 1:41 left. But instead, they kept stopping Jerick McKinnon, and they let the clock go down to 20 seconds when Minnesota kicked the field goal. Now there's 20 seconds, no timeouts, and you have no shot. It was a chip shot field goal. Now you can go, well, Blair Walsh missed a chip shot field goal in the playoff game for Minnesota just a few years ago. But you got to play the percentages. What? Is there like a 4% chance they're going to miss a field goal inside of 30 yards? And it's a higher than 4% chance that you're going to come back with Mitch Trubisky and two timeouts in 1:41. Play the percentages. Let them score.
But they already wasted their best 2-point play. That's what I need to take away from this game. Did anyone else? You saw the 2-point play, right, Chris?
Yeah, that was bananas.
The double reverse option pitch to Trubisky.
Boise State had that plan for against San Diego State, and now the Bears let it.
Can that count as more than 2 points? Because that might be the best play I've ever seen in football.
Yeah, it was nice. It was smooth. Well done.
And speaking of well done, did you see the touchdown celebration by Minnesota?
Absolutely.
This game had everything great. They played Duck Duck Goose, or apparently, as they call in Minnesota, Duck Duck Gray Duck.
Gray Duck?
Apparently, there's this whole controversy that in Minnesota, it's called Duck Duck Gray Duck.
Nah, man. It's Duck Duck Goose.
No,
it's Duck Duck Goose. We need a poll question. Is this game called Duck Duck Goose?
Someone posted a map. I saw it. All 49 states call it Duck Duck Goose, and then Minnesota calls it Duck Duck Gray Duck. So we have to ask JP. He's been in Minnesota.
Land of Lakes.
Duck Duck Gray Duck or Duck Duck Goose?
It has to absolutely be Goose. They have it wrong there. Well, I don't know, a celebration. Did you see? I tweeted this out, and I usually don't have my fantasy football stories because, you know, fantasy football, it's your own league.
Yeah.
No, not many people care about other people's leagues. But I have to share this. I lost in fantasy football this week in the league that I was undefeated. I was 4-0. I lost 100-98.
Okay, that's pretty close.
Which is a close matchup. The other team that I was facing started three players on bye weeks.
100
including
points
Drew
with
Brees.
Three players on a bye is
yes,
very impressive.
With Drew Brees, a kicker, and a receiver, both from the Redskins.
So obviously getting zeros.
All on bye. And started Steven Jackson at running back. Yes, Steven Jackson. The one who used to play for the Rams.
And
the one who played for the Falcons for a half a minute. Who hasn't been in the NFL in the last 2 seasons.
But he can't get negative scoring, though, because he's not in the game.
I don't know how somebody ended up with Steven Jackson on their team in their starting lineup.
So there's four
at running back.
So who scored for them? If they had 100 points, who scored?
They had the Jacksonville defense.
Yeah, that'll help.
They had 30 points. They had DeAndre Hopkins.
That'll also
who had
help.
A bunch of points. And like basically everybody who played had at least 10.
How did they draft Steven Jackson?
But I don't know how.
The thing is,
people like in their leagues, somebody is that guy who starts players on bye weeks all the time. But to start Steven Jackson in a fantasy football league in 2017, I don't know if they've started him every week. I need to look at that. But this week, in his lineup was Steven Jackson. That Steven Jackson. Anyone?
You just got styled on.
I don't understand this.
You know how they had like the fantasy loser has to go stand on the corner with a sign that says "I lost fantasy." Yeah. You should have to do that.
I said I quit. Like
there's no going back to Steven Jackson football in his starting lineup.
How do you go back to fantasy football when you lose to a team that had three guys on bye week and Steven Jackson in a 2017 fantasy football matchup?
You should just surrender that league. Trade all your players. Drop everyone else. Give up.
Quit.
Also, one thing to note from the Bears game, they had their longest touchdown pass of the season, 38 yards from the punter, Pat O'Donnell.
That's not what you want at this point, Chicago.
Quarterback controversy? Pat O'Donnell a quarterback? Can Trubisky punt?
It's like Randall Cunningham. Have him do both. Have the punter do both jobs.
And then going to college football, my favorite head coach, hopefully one day back at the University of Tennessee because he needs to be in the Power 5. Lane Kiffin, he's over at Florida Atlantic, but he's still going to poke the bear. And Nick Saban, Saban after Alabama won 27-19 this week over Texas A&M, called the media poison. He said on the media, "I'm trying to get our players to listen to me instead of you guys. All that stuff you write about how good we are, all that stuff they hear on ESPN, it's like poison. It's like taking poison." Well, Kiffin, FAU, we've forgotten. They're 2-0 in Conference USA. There was a tweet out that said, according to ESPN's FPI, Florida Atlantic has the highest chance to win Conference USA. And Kiffin quoted, tweeted that, said, "Please stop media. This is rat poison to our players. Hashtag process."
Oh, you can't bring process.
He processed it. Hashtag process at FAU.
Nah, that's reserved for Philly. Lane Kiffin cannot steal the process.
I do find it interesting that Kiffin seems to have a grudge against Saban, and I know maybe they kind of had a falling out there at the end when Kiffin was trying to get the job down at the FAU, but he doesn't get that job if he's not an assistant at Alabama. Saban saved him by pulling him off the junkie.
I just hope he goes back to Tennessee.
My question is, how long before the president stops using fake news and starts going with poison? I mean, it's applicable.
Does he pay attention to Nick Saban, though?
I wouldn't rule it out.
He might take advice from Lane Kiffin, but who doesn't take advice from Lane Kiffin? But that's all we got.
You only have until tomorrow at 4 to win $1,000. Listen today and tomorrow at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. for your chance. Just text the keyword to 62582 for your chance to win. It's KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio, The Ticket. Quick Hits coming up next, where Chris and I tackle four topics in rapid-fire fashion, including what other NFL trade should happen besides Adrian Peterson, and what's the wildest uniform I see coming on Saturday. That's next on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris. Topic number one.
Baseball, there's always a lot of trades in the middle of the season. Football, almost never. Adrian Peterson just went from the Saints to the Cardinals, so that's rare. Chris, you advocate some other trades in the NFL. What would you like to see?
Yeah, people should trade more in the NFL. Because, like the Giants, for example. Why do the Giants need Eli Manning? What's the point? Why do you need Eli? You're 0-5. You have no receivers. You have an expensive quarterback who might be past his prime, but he might still be able to help some team out. He just can't help out the Giants. I don't know if Joe Montana in his prime right now could help out the Giants. They got a lot of issues. But what if he was able to change teams to somebody like Jacksonville? Jacksonville right now is playing like they have no confidence in Blake Bortles. Like, if they can't run the ball 18 million times with Leonard Fournette, they don't have a way to move the ball down the field. That's why it's so important for them to get leads, because they have no ability to come from behind. Would the Jaguars trade like a third-round pick for Eli? They're 3-2 right now, the only team that's winning the AFC South. So you can't make the case that, well, this year they're not going to go anywhere anyway. No, they're leading a division. They're a division winner after this game. But you clearly need an upgrade at quarterback to be sustained here. Eli's an upgrade over Blake Bortles. So why don't you trade something to make it happen?
And do you think that Tennessee, Houston, and the Colts are that good? No, you got the Patriots or somebody in your division.
No. So you have a lead there. Another one that I have. Similar logic. What do the Chargers need Phillip Rivers for at this point? We've seen the movies before. They lose close, heartbreaking games at the end. They're in a tough division. And at this point, the smarter move is to lose and get one of those quarterbacks here at the top of the draft.
But who wants him?
how about a team like Miami? The Dolphins. Jay Cutler's
Jay
terrible.
Cutler.
Jay Cutler's, they can't move the ball. Their offensive line coach is snorting white powder in the office and has just resigned. Jay Ajayi's out there saying, man, I would like some room to run the football, but nobody respects our passing game. And our offensive line coach is what I just said, and that also affects Jay Ajayi. So, why not?
What about the Vikings?
Vikings, too?
Because Sam Bradford, apparently, his knee just is untouchable.
That was bad. That was a bad performance by him. And Case Keenum's looking all right. But Phillip Rivers could go to, although they just traded a first-round pick for a quarterback. So how many times can they keep trading first-round picks?
If Eli can only get a third-rounder, Phillip's not going to get much higher than that.
All right, so third-rounder from the Vikings to upgrade a quarterback, get them Phillip Rivers. Who says no? Nobody says no, apparently.
Phillip Rivers, because he doesn't want to leave the San Diego area.
He didn't want to go to L.A.
It's nine kids.
Topic number two.
Do you think you've seen it all when it comes to uniform designs?
I thought I had, but I think every time I think I have, something comes out to top it. We've retweeted a picture if you want to see it, but Florida is going to have gator uniforms. And I mean literally gator uniforms. It's going to be a look and a feel of an alligator. Says it took Nike 2 years to develop this. I'm sure they must have a whole lot of time on their hands. It's going to be swamp green, and it has an alligator skin pattern on the jersey with an orange number and blue trim on the sleeves. I don't know. It has not been well received from the Gator Nation. What do you think of it?
They're busy. They're very busy, and as a broadcaster, I don't like them because it's difficult to see the numbers. That's really all that matters. You could have tie-dye jerseys, for all I care. If you can see the numbers clearly, go for it. But as the second we start to have a difficulty seeing the numbers, that's where I draw the line.
Topic number three.
Why should you trust the process?
Because apparently it gets you paid. Joel Embiid, he calls himself the process. He says trust the process quite a bit. He's a Philadelphia 76ers center who has played in a grand total of 31 games in 3 years, but he signed his contract extension for the Sixers, which was reported as a 5-year, $148 million extension. Now, $148 million of that is not guaranteed. There's language in the contract, still not sure of exactly the details, what Zach Lowe of ESPN said, perhaps the most complicated extension in NBA history because of all the different stipulations that have to go in there for a guy who's played in 31 games in 3 years. But the ceiling is certainly that of a max player, so thus the ceiling of this contract is a max extension. But, you know, 5 years, $148 million is a lot of money for 31 games, whether you, reach the ceiling of it or not. But as a Sixers fan, that's a deal that you had to do because this dude's a top five player if he can get it all together and stay on the court for 60, 70 games a season. So as the Sixers, you got to take the cautious approach to make it happen, sit him out for back-to-back games, and you got to protect him and practice and do all that. But the ceiling is certainly worth it. So 5 years, $148 million, a lot of money, a lot of risk attached to it, depending on what the language of the contract is. So I can't really have an opinion on it until I know, okay, what is the injury protection? If he plays in this game, is the trigger on this date? Until I know those, I can't give you an opinion, just besides the fact that having the ceiling of Joel Embiid as a Sixer for 5 years is pretty exciting.
Wouldn't you like to be able to have that for your pleasure reading, the contract? Probably got to be, what, 50 pages?
It's got to be huge. I don't know if these agents and lawyers have to be a part of coming to an agreement like that. And, again, I have no idea what's in it right now. But
if
like
he gets hurt on an odd number day, it's guaranteed. If he gets hurt on an even number day, it's not guaranteed.
All right, so let's see. If you're going to get hurt, Joel, today's the day. We can't have you hurt tomorrow, but today, if you get hurt, it's not as bad if you get hurt tomorrow. It might be something silly like that.
Topic number four.
What was the Diamondbacks' best defensive play last night?
Well, it came from the Arizona police. They guarded the pool. I've seen games when they're afraid the fans are going to rush the field, and they get horses out there. They've done that at old Yankee Stadium before. They had horses out on the warning track in center field. But the Diamondbacks didn't win. No, it wasn't to keep the fans back. It was to keep the Dodgers back. The Dodgers, when they clinched the division in 2013, went out after the game was over and had a pool party at the pool in right center field. The Diamondbacks wanted to make sure the Dodgers wouldn't have a pool party again. My guess is the Diamondbacks should have played better and put less into the plans to keep the Dodgers out of the pool and more into the plans of how they'd pitch and hit against them.
Is that the kind of measures that have to be taken to keep you out of the pool, the neighborhood pool? I know you're a big swimmer.
I probably would have not crossed the police with the, on the horseback, but I couldn't believe it. I mean, the thing's over. You've lost. The season's over. You've got swept.
Yeah,
I'm gone.
Swim.
I could care less if the Dodgers are in the pool.
Yeah, let them swim. Although I imagine the picture is not great when the Dodgers are out here putting on Instagram them in the pool, your pool in your house. But, hey, you should have won.
Mm-hmm.
Quick Hits with Bob and Chris on 93.1 The Ticket.
Somebody had to think of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Wow, maybe the Dodgers are going to clinch here, and they're going to embarrass us by going in the pool.
You know who would have gone in the pool anyway? Joel Embiid.
And gotten hurt, right?
No! Don't say that out loud! Stop it! I don't want to hear that.
Giants pitcher, 1 year in spring training, got injured on the diving board in spring training in Arizona.
Keep him away from Madison Bumgarner in the dirt bikes.
Top four next when we come back on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. Tuesdays at 2. Has a bit of a ring to it. Through the last couple of seasons, Bob and Chris have taken a look at our top four for the college football playoff and also our group of five team that deserves to go to the New Year's Six. And a lot of weeks we just kind of regurgitate our four that we have up there because, you know, sometimes there aren't a lot of things to change. But this week, for the first time in 27 years, Iowa State wins in Norman and Oklahoma falls. And Chris, you and I both had Oklahoma in our top four. And both Oklahoma and Oklahoma State have now taken losses in the first third of the season. And Oklahoma's win over Ohio State now, to me, comes into a little bit of question. Do you give them the big bump for the big win at Columbus if we get down to a whole bunch of one-loss teams? Or do you penalize them big time for losing at home to somebody that may not win half their games?
Yeah, it's definitely the dynamic of the best win on the board and also perhaps the worst loss on the board. But they're not a factor until some other teams start to lose games. And when you're in the Big 12, do you have enough? Oh, the Big 12 has had some teams kind of rise near the top. So we'll see how that schedule continues to play out. But you're right. You have the best win on the board, and you'll probably have the worst loss on the board amongst these one-loss teams, or you could. So how does that stack up amongst the other one-loss teams? Time will tell.
All right. Last week, I had Clemson, Alabama, Oklahoma, and Georgia in that order. Chris, what was your order last week?
I believe it was Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia, and Alabama.
All right, let's get going for this week's top four.
Number one.
So I'll stick with Clemson at the top. I don't know what they need to do to get more votes in the AP and coaches poll, but they win. They have a difficult schedule. They faced Auburn, Louisville, and Virginia Tech, all good teams. They've crushed some teams along the way, yet they're behind Alabama still. Clemson's number one. Difficulty of schedule and how they've performed with that schedule easily, to me, is the number one team in the country.
I concur. I don't know what more I can add other than they also won it last year. They look to be the best team. They're airtight defensively. Clemson, by far and away, to me, the easiest pick on the board. They're number one.
Number two.
I'm going to take Alabama for number two, and I know it's not the chic pick by a lot of people, but it just seems to me that when I'm watching Alabama, whenever they need something, they get it done. They're tough defensively. They do enough offensively to get it done. Whenever they kind of get challenged or people kind of say things about them, that's when they come out with their best performances. I know at the end it got a little closer against Texas A&M, but I just think they're very consistent, and I don't ever expect Alabama to lose to somebody like Iowa State.
Yeah, but that's not what we're doing. We're evaluating their resume to this point, and Alabama's resume to this point is not that of a number two team in the country. Their best win is against Florida State, and Florida State isn't great. I know they had a crazy game against Miami.
See,
I
rate
weekend,
the Florida State.
Lost.
I rate the Florida State win because of the quarterback being knocked out of the game significantly better than I think you were doing.
But that was also around halftime, so it means that quarterback didn't play much of the second half of that game. So who's to say what would have happened in the second half of that game if Francois was able to play a good chunk of it? So like I can't if you're going to say, well, they beat Florida State with half of their quarterback in, well, you have to consider the fact, well, the second half of the game it was the Florida State team that since then has been pretty bad. So if that's your best win on the board and really your only ranked win, your other games are Fresno, Colorado State, Vanderbilt, Mississippi, and Texas A&M, sorry, it's not number two. And I know you're supposed to be a little conservative with your Georgia squad. You don't want to put them out there on a limb. But they beat Notre Dame at Notre Dame, and they beat Mississippi State. That's better than anything that Alabama's had on their board. They're also perfect undefeated right now, 6-0. Georgia's number two.
Number three.
So I destroyed your argument there. TCU's number three. TCU has to get vaulted in because the Big 12 lost their big front runner. TCU, after that, they've beaten Oklahoma State and they've beaten West Virginia. I didn't think they'd beat West Virginia. And the fact that they went to Oklahoma State and won that game too, you're looking at Big 12 team to join the mix. Two ranked wins, still haven't lost. I'm going with TCU.
I'm going to go with Georgia at number three. I've followed Georgia football since I was a student there at the mid-80s. They've beaten Mississippi State, Tennessee, and Vanderbilt. Conference games, probably teams in the middle to the bottom of the league by the time the year is over. But they've beaten them the last 3 weeks, 116-17. I can't remember Georgia beating people by this wide a margin since Walker played.
Then why can't you put them number two? I put them number two over Alabama. What are you afraid of? Put them number two.
Probably should have. But there's just something about Alabama. I just can't put him ahead of Alabama right
now. Stop being scared, Bob. Do it. Have confidence in your squad. Have confidence in your school. Put him number two. He won't do it.
Number four.
I've got TCU at number four. I like their last two wins, Oklahoma State and West Virginia. I don't think there is a team in the country. They're maybe equal, but that are coached better than TCU and Gary Patterson. They always seem to be competitive to me. They get the job done. They don't seem to, you know, lay eggs like Oklahoma and Oklahoma State did. We'll see. They'll have to play Oklahoma a little later on in the season because everybody plays everybody in the Big 12. But I think TCU right now, especially what they've done the last couple of weeks, to me gets themselves into the playoff four right now.
Yeah, I had TCU at three. I need to have a fourth team. And put Washington State and Alabama's resume side by side and tell me which one's is better to this point. Washington State with wins against Boise State, win against USC, and a win at Oregon. Alabama, their three best wins, well, you could say the game against Florida State, which is not a better win than the one against USC. After that, they faced
A&M,
Mountain West
probably.
State. A&M, okay, is winning at A&M significantly more difficult than winning at Oregon, it might be around the same level. Mm-hmm. And Washington State beat Boise State. I don't think anybody else on Alabama's schedule is at Boise State's level. They face Fresno and Colorado State, and we don't think that those teams are better than Boise State. So if you look at their two resumes side by side, Washington State's to me is better. I'm putting Washington State as number four.
I had Penn State, Washington, and Wisconsin as all honorable mentions for me.
They haven't played
anybody,
but
I don't think any of those three have played anybody that I can't put them ahead of the people that are there. Washington State has a better body of work than the three teams aforementioned.
Yeah, and ESPN made fun of the Washington Huskies on that broadcast, and Chris Peterson wasn't happy about them cupcakes on there. But, I mean, like, it's not like it has had a Boise State or a USC, the type of teams that Washington State has already beaten. So I don't think that Washington State is better than Washington, but that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing is we're picking to this point who has the better resume, and on that note, I have to pick Washington State.
Group of five. I still have San Diego State ahead, but they have the toughest challenge of the contenders this week, taking on Boise State. The three teams in the American, obviously they'll have to whittle it down to whoever wins the league. South Florida plays Cincinnati. Central Florida plays a very poor East Carolina team. And Navy on upset alert this week going to Memphis.
I just wonder, and I have San Diego State too.
You have them number two or you have them as well?
No, I have them as well.
Okay.
I have them also.
Okay.
Can they, is there a path for them to survive as the number one group of five team at the end of the year, considering the American basically has, what, the next three, the next four, the next five on the list? Like, you figure whoever makes their way out of it, even if it's one loss, within that league, they're going to get boosted up because of the difficulty of that conference.
I don't think a one-loss American beats an undefeated San Diego.
Okay. I think it'll
be close. I think so. I think it'll be close, but I don't think so. I don't think so, because the loss is not coming to a Power 5. It'd be coming to somebody inside the conference.
Okay.
I don't think. I mean, I could be wrong. And I think having a guy that people want to see, I know they're not supposed to, but a Rashad Penny on your roster, he's probably more of a marquee name than anybody on any of those other teams.
Yeah. San Diego State better not lose, is what I'm saying. Better not.
When we come back, Ted Leitner, the voice of the Aztecs, will join us. We'll find out how good is Rashad Penny. Is he close to Marshall Faulk? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Saturday night, 8:30 Mountain, 7:30 Pacific. Boise State at San Diego State. Both teams undefeated in the Mountain West. Bob and Chris here on Idaho Sports Talk on Sports Radio The Ticket. And joining us now from San Diego is the longtime voice of the Aztecs, Ted Leitner. Ted, thanks for taking a few minutes to chat with us today.
Hey, my pleasure. Long time no see, guys. Yeah. How you doing?
We're doing great. My first question is, this Aztec team this year that's 6-0, how does it compare to the past two teams that won the league?
I don't think it is as good as the last 2 years, especially offensive, especially defensively. I think the offense is comparable, although the offensive line is much, much younger, but it's been pretty good despite being much younger, and I think it's been better than Rocky Long thought. But the defense is not what it was, and that's understandable. I mean, they've given Calvin Munson to the New York Giants and DeMonte Casey to Baltimore and so forth and so on, and losing Alex Barrett, also three guys on the NFL. So they can't, especially with Casey not in the secondary, and two freshmen there instead. So they give up more big plays than they have, both running and passing, in the last couple of years. So even Rocky, before this year, had said, well, you know what, we're gonna probably lose a couple of games. We're not going to be that good early on. But when this offensive line gets older and experienced, it's going to be really, really good. Well, it got really good faster and even didn't have Antonio Rosales 2 weeks ago, had him back for the first half in Vegas last Saturday. And to answer your question, not as good, but really good.
And on that note, Ted, it's like – San Diego State's had a good running game the last couple of years, and you've mentioned that the defense, at least going into the year, wasn't supposed to be as strong as those prior couple of seasons. Well, the results haven't been losses. In fact, they've been some of the best wins that San Diego State has had in the program in quite some time. So why has that been the case? Why have they won these games?
Well, that's a good question, because despite, I think, and the running game is still there, it's been amazing to me. I mean, I feel so blessed. This back end of my career after all these years, because I started with him in 1978. So I just to have seen, you know, Marshall Faulk and George Jones and Larry Ned, and then, you know, Ronnie Hillman and Adam Moema, and then DJ Pumphrey, and now this guy, who may be as good as any of them except Marshall Faulk, in terms of Rashad Penny, I feel so incredibly blessed. I equate it, from a personal standpoint, doing Padre baseball all these years, and I would not just get to see the game for those specific 20 years of Padre baseball. I got to see the game, and I got to see Tony Gwynn bat four times a game, which was like a separate thrill of a game within the game. And I equate that to watching these amazing running backs of the Aztecs, and they've been able to break a big one here, get a kickoff return there. But I think, like the last couple of years, whenever they've had this close game, and they've had close games, even Northern Illinois could have easily lost that at home 2 weeks ago. And then, you know, somebody, a Cameron Kelly, somebody like that, will come up with a late interception, which he's done twice. And again, just like the last few years, not as good a defense, but a defense that comes up with a big play when they needed it. And so they've won the close ball games, and they're undefeated.
Ted Leitner joining us. He's the voice of the Aztecs. They're 6-0, ranked 18th in the polls. Ted, how do you compare Penny with some of those running backs you mentioned? You mentioned Marshall Faulk as being the top. How far off is Penny, and where may the differences be?
The difference, Bobby, the difference is that no one is the receiver that Marshall was, both here and as you guys saw in with the Rams and so forth in the National Football League. This was one of the great, I don't know that I've seen, not Roger Craig with the 49ers, yada, yada, yada. I don't think I've seen a better receiver running back or running back receiving ever than Marshall. And they don't throw that much to Rashad Penny. He's okay. He's got good hands, better than Pumphrey, in my opinion. They're both good at that. But I think the difference is this guy is bigger than Marshall. This guy is faster than Marshall Faulk, and he's faster, I believe, than all the others. So that kind of power, I mean, he turned a corner on the cornerback Tim Huff there, or the nickelback Huff in Vegas, and I mean, just absolutely splattered him. And they've encouraged him, honestly, the last couple of weeks to do that. And in this era of guys running out of bounds and all this stuff, they've told him, hey, Rashad, and I don't know if they don't think it's bringing on the possibility of injury, but they've told him, Rashad, you're bigger. You're fast. You turn that corner like that. Take those guys on. And he started to do that, especially in Vegas. And that's not, except for maybe Larry Ned, way back when in the early 90s, they haven't had somebody to do that. And he is, you know, Pumphrey was a really, really nice NFL prospect in the fourth round, fifth round, whatever, as a kind of a third down back. But this guy will be an every down back and a higher draft choice in the National Football League come the draft.
Ted Leitner joining us, the voice of San Diego State. And I got kind of an off-the-beat question, but also actually legitimately wondering. They've had a couple of delays in games this year. What do you do during these delays that San Diego State has had this season?
And I've never seen anything like it. And I know you guys have never seen anything like it in your broadcast careers. Just absolutely unbelievable that one game at home in the fourth quarter and they're trailing Stanford, and all of a sudden the lights go out. Now, when's the last time you saw that?
Ever, Super Bowl.
Ever. And I've had it personally one time in a Padre-Arizona Diamondback game, whatever, 15 years ago, when a transformer blew in the old place down in Mission Valley. And lots of times that happens. And now here we are getting out of there, not playing baseball anymore, but playing football there. And again, the lights go out. And I thought, my gosh, it could be hours before they, in this old place, get, you know, the troubleshooters, the electricians, if they can find them, to get it fixed. And I thought it was miraculous. And they did a great job and took like 22 minutes in the fourth quarter. And the Aztecs were behind Stanford. They were driving. The lights go off. They come back on. And they go and complete the drive in the light and win the ball game. Then they go to Air Force, and it's an absolute monsoon. I've never seen – no, those guys who've been in this business longer than me, including Rocky Long and his guys, they've never seen worse conditions for a football game ever. And upstairs, you know what Air Force is like, so far back with those the glass can't open the windows, yard lines are wiped out by this torrential rain. And it's unbelievable. And they start out and they're being pushed around by Air Force. Just awful. Once again, they have an hour and a half delay because of the lightning rules of the NCAA once the thunderstorm gets there. And they come back. And after the delay, just like it's against Stanford at home, they play great. They come on. They overcome Air Force. And they win the ball game. You know, some years it just looks like things are happening for you and it's your year. And other times it hasn't. So far, with all that crazy stuff, this has been the Aztecs' year.
Ted, is there anything in these first six games that have given them trouble?
Yes, I think so. And I think, having mentioned Northern Illinois, smaller, quicker defensive lines have given them trouble because they have, you know, their offensive line. We're talking guys at 6'7" and 320 and 6'5" and 315. It's an NFL offensive line. It's like the BYU lines used to be when they were good. And I watched them the other day, you guys, and they're no longer good. My God, that's the worst BYU team I've seen in 30 years. So we have, the Aztecs have that kind of an offensive line. It's very young. It's inexperienced. Only one guy, I mentioned Antonio Rosales, ever started a ball game. That's a massive, major change when you're depending on running the ball, and you've done that for years now with all those running backs I mentioned earlier, and they've been pretty darn good. Pretty darn good so far. So those quick offensive linemen, you know, and linebackers, quick fronts has given them trouble. And like I said, guys with a big play, big strike, like this kid Christian Blake, this wide receiver from Northern Illinois, they could not cover him. And he's going downfield for, you know, on 70, 80-yard plays. That didn't happen. And that kind of speed, in addition to the inexperience with a couple of freshmen in the secondary for the Aztecs, to answer your question, that's given them trouble.
Ted Leitner joining us, voice of San Diego State. Also, as you mentioned a couple of times, he does the Padre games as well. And with the Major League Baseball playoffs going on, the Los Angeles Dodgers being one of the main stories there, they've officially made it to the NLCS. The Dodgers, their season, have you seen anything like it from the high highs to the low lows, and what to expect from them in the NLCS?
No, that's just bizarre. They were, you know, so good. Now they're on the cover of Sports Illustrated. That probably, the Sports Illustrated jinx, that probably brought on the losing streak, 11 straight, whatever it was. But and calling them, I think, on that same cover, greatest team of all time, question mark? No, they're not. No, they're not. But they're incredibly talented. They're incredibly, their depth is off the chart. And they do all these things, having lost Andrew Tolles for the year and Ethier for the basically till September and all these other things. And injuries to Kershaw again for a month and Brandon McCarthy. They're so deep. They're so good. And they're so rich. You know, I mean, they got so much money. Whatever they need, they can go out and buy. They can't do that now, but they can do that. You know, and just if they blow $60 million on a pitcher, write it off and go spend $70 million on another pitcher. That's an incredible largesse of riches. They are a terrific team. And still, I don't think, honestly, they're better than the Cubs or Washington. I honestly like the starting rotation of the Cubs and the Nationals more than I do the Dodgers. But to answer your question, my God, they were, what, 52-9? Is that what it was? No, 32-9? I forget which. But just ridiculous. I've never seen anything quite like it. And even then, in a good division, with the improvement of Arizona and Colorado, that's remarkable in that National League West.
Ted, so who do we see in the World Series, do you think?
That's a very good question. I think the Cubs will be back. I really do. I really do. I thought the Indians would be there. I think they're in the midst of another, at least they choked late, like in the World Series last year when they had the 3-1 lead. Mm-hmm. And then, see, speaking of delays, I thought that's what I equated the delays for the Aztecs, was that rain delay in Game 7 with the Indians and Cubs last year, you know? And I thought, same thing, they got the delay, it saved them, like the two-time saved the Aztecs this year. But I don't know the American League or see the American League enough, but I thought Cleveland was the best team, and they had a marvelous 2-0 lead, and now I think they're in big-time jeopardy. But I expect to see the Cubs back in the World Series. I really do.
Ted, thanks so much for your time. If Boise State's ahead, I'm going to the fuse box and make sure that I tape the box shut so you can't go in there and flip the lights out in the middle of the fourth quarter.
We got to think of something. Remember that first Super Bowl when they had the broadcast, both CBS, I think it was, and NBC, that first Super Bowl in Los Angeles with the whoever it was, the Packers and Chiefs, whatever, and they had a moment there where they were off the air and the game was about to continue, and a TV executive told one of the guys on the field, "Run on the field! Delay the game. We're not ready to come back." This is a key moment in the game. You remember, he ran on the field, ran around like he was some nut out of the stands with security chasing him, but he did it long enough until the networks could come back and do that. So, hey, whatever it takes on Saturday, I'm ready to do for my Aztecs.
Was he wearing a red hat? And that was at the beginning of the red hat?
Not a red hat. Not a red hat. Just some TV guy with a pass and whatever his job was on the sideline. And get out there. Stop this game. And he did. Aztecs will have to, if they need that again, they need a plan to do that.
Ted, thanks so much. Looking forward to seeing you and looking forward to the game on Saturday.
Good guys. Appreciate it very much.
And that is Ted Leitner, voice of the Aztecs, voice of the Padres.
Didn't they redo a kickoff too in that game too?
They did, because one of the networks was back and the other one wasn't. So they actually re-kicked. I think it was the second half kickoff they did twice.
Yeah. The old Super Bowl stories that would never happen today.
Never would. You have only until tomorrow at 4 to win $1,000. Listen today and tomorrow at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. for your chance. Just text the keyword to 62582 for your chance to win. It's KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, we've got a sports update. Did Mitchell Trubisky live up to the hype last night starting for the Bears? That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket.
This Ticket Sports Update is sponsored by Western States Equipment. The Western States Cat winning moment against BYU was a 24-yard touchdown pass at the end of the second quarter. It was the first touchdown pass of the year for Boise State's Brett Rippon. Western States Cat and the Cat Rental Store are built around you. Well, there was a trade today in the NFL that rarely happens, but Adrian Peterson's experiment in New Orleans has failed after averaging his 3 yards a carry and falling to number 3 on the depth chart. He has been traded to the Arizona Cardinals for a conditional draft pick. Better look out for him to head over to Rome. I saw on Twitter he started as a saint. Now he's a cardinal. All that's left is a pope.
Good jokes. That might be the highlight of his career right there in New Orleans, was that joke that you just made. But that was actually the question I wanted to ask you. What will you remember Adrian Peterson's Saints tenure as? Like, what will be the defining moment?
I will remember everyone coming up to me and asking me about that video and him yelling at Sean Payton when he really didn't yell at Sean Payton. You can read his lips. He's saying, we need to run it up there, donkey. And everyone thought he was yelling at him.
Well, he sounded like he was. It looked like he was yelling.
He was giving a very heartfelt suggestion, I'd like to say.
The same one that Le'Veon Bell was given?
Yes, it was very comparable to Le'Veon Bell's. We just need to run the ball more.
Well, Le'Veon Bell needs to run the ball better.
So does Adrian Peterson, yeah. 3 yards a carry.
I expect more from Le'Veon Bell than I do from Adrian Peterson.
You don't hear Kareem Hunt saying that the Chiefs need to run the ball more. You don't hear Todd Gurley yelling that the Rams need to run the ball more. It's funny, when you're running well, it seems like
your actions speak, right?
You're content with the way things are going. When you're not running well, it's like, see, I would be running better if I got the ball more. But no, you got to run well to get the ball more. It's usually the first thing is you have to run well. You'll get the ball if you run well.
I don't think Gurley could really make any suggestions after he fumbled away a win.
But I hate that rule.
I mean, it's a dumb rule, but he did fumble away a win. You got to hold the ball through the end zone. Come on.
He was reaching out
ball
for the
security.
Pylon.
Ball security. That's what
the
they preach.
The defense gets the ball? Why does the defense doesn't deserve to get the ball?
So where do you think the ball should go? Should it be at
the
1?
I think the offense should keep it at the 20. It's a touchback. I understand that. So put it at the 20. That's enough
first
of a
and
penalty.
10?
That's enough of a penalty. You were at the goal line, and now you have to go back to the 20.
Is it first and 10, or is it the same down?
Depends if they got the first down or not.
But what if it's fourth down?
It's third and goal. Say it's third and goal. They reach out.
If it was third and goal, you fumbled, and it goes to the 20. Now it's fourth and goal.
So it's fourth and goal from the 20.
Yes.
Okay. As I say, otherwise, if I'm in the offense, I'm going to start throwing the ball out of bounds. Oh, first and 10 from the 20.
Yeah, it's now fourth and goal from the 20.
Okay. All
right. Is that...
I think that makes sense. That makes sense.
Right? Because if you fumble it out of bounds, it's not like the defense gets it. So why does the defense deserve to get it? Because
it's on the playing field. The end zone's different.
Why? It shouldn't be that much different. That if you fumble it at the one-inch line, the offense gets the ball at the one inch.
Chris,
if he hits the pylon, the defense gets it at the 20?
I like
that
Chris's rule because then we won't have players batting balls out of bounds.
Yeah.
Play for the fumble. Don't just launch it out of bounds to help your team.
Yeah, I think there'd be too many chances where you'd want to.
That doesn't
wanna
help.
Knock
you
it
would
out.
Rather recover in the end zone because you get a touchdown.
Yeah,
no teams are going to intentionally
want to knock
it out of the end zone so they can. The defense might want to knock it out of the end zone, but the defense wants to knock it out of the end zone right now. That's not
changing. They need less of an incentive to knock it out of the end zone. It's not football when you're trying to.
Okay, so now you can actually try to recover the
fumble.
Exactly.
That's why I'm saying
so
I like your rule. I like your rule. Perfect. I don't need them playing soccer and kicking balls out of the bounds. Plus, Chris, you were talking earlier about other midseason trades you want to see. We got a text from Chase in Nampa. He said you can't just trade quarterbacks midseason and expect them to turn an almost team into a contender. Playbooks and systems are something you master or cannot master over a short period of time. Not only that, but you have to build a relationship and trust with everyone. Takes too long in the midseason.
What trade did I suggest?
Eli to the Jaguars.
Who's the Jaguars executive? Tom Coughlin. I'm sure they can work something out.
Playbook,
Eli Manning's
though?
Played for Tom Coughlin for like 10 years in his career. They can work something out. They can find something. Whatever they're doing with Blake Bortles isn't a good offensive system anyway. Tom Coughlin used to be the coach of the Giants. The coach now is Doug Marrone. Doug Marrone is a disciple of Coughlin. They both went to Syracuse. They could work something out.
What about your Philip Rivers trade, though, to Miami? No familiarity there.
Adam Gase?
No.
Chicago,
or Minnesota?
Minnesota.
No.
North Turner used to be there.
No.
Philip Rivers used to.
You're trying.
North Turner used to be the coach. Philip Rivers. And North Turner was just there in the same offensive systems in place. I mean, I'm telling you, I get the point that you're making that NFL systems take a while to master, but they're not mastering it with Blake Bortles. There's no mastering going on right there. There's no mastering going on with Jay Cutler and Adam Gase. That was one connection that was made because he was supposed to be familiar with the Adam Gase system. He was there with them in Chicago, and now he's there with them in Miami. Guess what? Doesn't matter because he can't play.
Well, the offensive
line can the quarterback
can't play.
Play is the most important thing.
Well, Eli,
not some kind of
Eli
system.
Manning and Philip Rivers are combined 1-9 this year.
But really, you have to think that they're 0-8 because one of them had to beat the other one. So
the one win was
actually
1-7
because the win and a loss should go out off the board.
Yeah, but on that look, again, I don't think Eli's great by any stretch. I never thought he was a great quarterback, but he's better than Blake Bortles. And if you have a chance to win the division and upgrade that position, I feel like you have to do it, especially when you're the Jags. You know how much hype you get if you're the Jags and you make the playoffs this year?
And they'll lose to the Patriots.
Do they play their playoff games in Jacksonville, or does one of the games go to London?
Probably.
Who would I have to play to London? Hey, Blake Bortles undefeated in London. They might be rooting for that.
If you can get Blake Bortles for that playoff game in London, do it.
Well, speaking of quarterbacks, Mitchell Trubisky era starts in Chicago, and we can now officially call him Mitchell because he has one L to his name. He lost last night. He had his first career touchdown pass, also his first interception. But that's the most casual throw I've ever seen in a tie game at your own 20. He's kind of lobbed it up there. No urgency.
The guy just picked it off and set up the Vikings with the game-winning field goal. If I'm the Bears, I look at John Fox funny for not suggesting that the Bears just give up a touchdown. Give up a touchdown after that interception so you can have the ball with a minute 41 left and two timeouts instead of letting the Vikings run it down to 20 seconds and kick a chip shot field goal.
I'm looking at John Fox and asking where more of those plays like that two-point conversion are.
Oh, sure. Because
they have to have more than one, right?
Is there a counter to that play? I feel like that was an option, so the counter is the guy keeps it.
Yeah.
Well, I almost think the Bears have spent too much time working on two-point conversions.
The counter is you just light up the quarterback because he's considered a runner, and then they will never run that play again.
Because if you give up the ball and come back, and it comes back to you, you get none of the protection that the rules have for a quarterback.
That's why the whole Jay Cutler incident, where in the Wildcat, he just stood there. Because as soon as you take a step forward, you're an eligible receiver, and you can be smashed into the turf.
Lit up with the best of them. It looks like something the Chiefs would do. The Chiefs have
The Chiefs have gone just crazy in plays now.
I like their style, though. I just wonder how long it'll keep tricking people.
Well, can they even field a roster at this point with how many players are getting hurt?
Can the NFL field a roster with how many players are getting
hurt? I don't know that I can remember in the first, five games or whatever? I can't remember more people being hurt.
This week just made me look at this. Like, are we really expecting them to go through this for our entertainment? Not just the injuries, but the painful looks on their face when they're getting hurt, the mechanics of all these injuries. I'm like,
and there's people who won 18 games. There's people who won 18 regular season games.
I don't think you can force these guys.
Surprisingly, no one on the Dolphins or Bucks has gotten hurt, have they?
Despite I'm sure the somebody, but nobody long-term on name.
Despite the fact they have no bye weeks.
Not yet.
And they played rusty the first week.
I haven't had any serious ones, but now don't try to jinx my Bucks. I still have them in the Super Bowl.
They're in last in their division. They're in dead last.
The NFC East team that they were going to face in the NFC Championship game.
Also in dead last.
In dead last without a win yet.
They're moving for the number one pick.
Well, the rest of my predictions are good, though.
Some of them. Not your. You can't take your. That's consolation picks. You made your Super Bowl pick. It's not looking good. I don't care about
your
playing.
Bucks are fine. I still think the Bucks are fine.
I think the Bucks are in better shape than the Giants.
Well, yeah.
I think the NFL's in better shape than the Giants.
Yes.
Name your team.
True. And we'll end the sports update by just letting every Bears fan know, mainly JP, Deshaun Watson had almost similar stats. He was 12 of 23 for 118 yards, a touchdown interception in his first game. There's hope.
Let's see what weeks 2, 3, and 4 bring for Trubisky. You only have until tomorrow at 4 to win $1,000. Listen today and tomorrow at 7 a.m., 10 a.m., 1 p.m., and 4 p.m. for your chance. Just text the keyword to 62582 for your chance to win. It's KTIK's 4K a day on Sports Radio The Ticket. Up next, what we learned today about baseball and the Boise State-San Diego State matchup. That's next on Sports Radio The Ticket. Listen to the Treasure Valley Prep Rally. It's brought to you by Mount West Bank this Thursday at 4:45 on Idaho Sports Talk with Caves and Prater. Each week, a high school football coach will discuss the game of the week, so don't miss it. Mount West Bank, love where you bank.
And it's time to find out what we learned on today's show on Idaho Sports Talk with Bob and Chris. It's sponsored by Pro-Am Sports, your full-service pro shop and bowling specialist. High-quality bowling balls, bags, shoes, and accessories. It's located right inside Westie's Garden Lanes in Garden City. Talked to Ted Leitner today, the voice of the San Diego State Aztecs, and we asked him how this year's Aztec team compares to the last two teams that won the Mountain West.
I don't think it is as good as the last 2 years. Especially defensively. I think the offense is comparable, although the offensive line is much, much younger, but it's been pretty good despite being much younger, and I think it's been better than Rocky Long thought, but the defense is not what it was, and that's understandable. I mean, they've given Calvin Munson to the New York Giants and DeMonte Casey to Baltimore and so forth and so on, and losing Alex Barrett, also three guys on the NFL, so they can't, especially with Casey not in the secondary, and two freshmen there instead. So they give up more big plays than they have, both running and passing, in the last couple of years.
And I think for Boise State to win, they're going to maybe need some big plays. We've heard they've had a little trouble with some speedy receivers. Can Cedric Wilson make a play or two and get into the end zone? And how much can Boise State's running game improve with Alexander Mattison? To me, those are the offensive questions coming into the game.
Yeah, he did say a little bit about, you know, smaller guys, too, that they had trouble with. But Cedric Wilson is not small by any stretch.
No, I think he meant smaller on the defensive line.
He didn't mean smaller on the defensive line, too. I thought he said something about the quicker receivers as well when he did reference what they struggled with. But Wilson is fast. He's big, and he'll make plays over the top. This just might be a game where he needs to have, like, six for 102 touchdowns for Boise State to have a shot. Or, you know, the Broncos could take the different approach and try to run it on them. Now, you probably have more of the numbers on how they've done against the run versus the pass, and it might be easier to throw on them with their cornerbacks this year. But we've seen from Boise State's standpoint, they are better when they're able to establish the run because they don't have a type of dynamic weapons in the passing game to usually beat an opponent like that.
I think you're right, and I think that they're going to need to, you know, again, stay on schedule because I think the best way to beat Rashad Penny is to have him stand on the sidelines next to Rocky Long. And you do that when you get first downs and you keep your offense on the field and keep theirs off.
Yeah, so running the ball, a key. Boise State did it 1 week. Does that mean that they will go back to what they did against BYU from an effectiveness standpoint? Or is the first month of the season the sample size that we should take? So that's why this game is a unique one.
We'll come up later today. We've got playoff baseball, game four between the Nationals and Cubs. Set to go off at 3:38 Mountain Time, though there is rain in Chicago. You've got Tanner Roark versus Jake Arrieta. The Cubs going to finish this off, or are we looking at a game five?
Assuming this game is played.
Assuming we actually get to play the game, yeah. So we might have a game four tomorrow.
I think the Cubs get it done.
You really don't like Dusty Baker, do you, in the playoffs?
No, I don't.
But you do think that if this thing goes kaput today, there's rain, no game, you do think then all of a sudden the Nationals get the advantage.
They better go to Strasburg. They better go to Strasburg.
Well, you don't think that they have to, right? If you get the extra day, you can use a better pitcher.
I would.
So,
but again, this is a group in 2012 that didn't use him in the postseason. You got to now, Baker wasn't the manager, but the organization didn't use him because they didn't want to take him past the innings limit. They've lost all three of the postseason series they've been in, and they've been the favorite in all three that they've been in. They've been the home team, I mean, in the five-game series. Lost in 12 to the Cardinals in five, lost to the Giants in 14 in four, and they lost last year to the Dodgers in five.
Which team has a better chance of beating the Dodgers?
I think the Cubs do.
Why?
Cubs beat them last year. I think there's just something about the grit with the Cubs.
Look at that. Something about the Cubs in the playoffs makes me like the Cubs.
Yeah, from last year.
What a different world we live in. There's just something about the Cubs in a playoff situation where I really like them. What is going on in this world?
Yeah. If you fell asleep about 3 or 4 years ago, what are they talking about? Jeff Caves is in studio. He and Mike Prater getting set to take over here for Idaho Sports Talk, bringing home from 3 until 6. Jeff, I know you, Southern California guy, excited about the Dodgers?
Nah. I mean, for those guys, if they get into the World Series and win it, I'm sure there would be a lot of celebration. But anything short of that, given the payroll that they have, they've sure gotten a free pass. I mean, that kind of payroll without getting the results that they've gotten just tells me really people are very distracted in Los Angeles, and they're not living and dying with the Dodgers, or they would just hammer them by now. Mm-hmm. Because how much money have they wasted, Beeler, through the last couple of years?
Probably $200 million, probably.
Yeah. And most of those fans, some of them appreciate the effort, but some of them just massacre them.
Well, and I think the thing that's the Dodgers, they've been in, you know, five National League Championship Series in the last 10 years, and they're 0-5, or 0-4, and this is the fifth time.
So like the Atlanta Braves of, I guess, you know, in today's times. Remember the Braves, how they never won at all, but they kept getting there. And was that in the 90s, essentially?
Yeah, I think the Braves, though, had more going for it. I mean, they lost in the World Series a few times, but I wouldn't put the Dodgers of the last 5 to 10 years in the same breath with the Braves.
Okay. Well, I wouldn't put them anywhere, so I don't really lose much sleep over it. But we lose a little sleep over the Mountain West Conference and some of these teams that are facing elimination possibly at two losses, the good, the bad, the ugly. And an update on the San Diego State stadium situation, which has taken some dramatic turns as the turf battle continues for who's going to control all the land that the San Diego Credit Union stadium sits on, or the old Qualcomm, and the school is maneuvering, and we'll get an update on that at 4 o'clock.
That's going to be fascinating, and there's a lot. If you've ever been down there, there is a lot of parking that goes around that stadium. That stadium is absolutely huge, seats 70,000 people. So, you know, you could carve off a portion of it, Jeff, and build a Bronco stadium, which would be, I think, kind of what they're talking about, 35, 40,000 seats, and still have a bundle of land left over.
Yeah, I don't know how fascinating that is, but I guess it depends on your own personal perspective. But yeah, there's a lot of money with that acreage, and there's a lot of arguing over who's going to make the most amount of money on it. We'll see how much clout that school has in that community, because it's about money, and we'll see if they've got it.
You guys have made me want to play Legos. I just want to break out my Lego set and start building stuff. You guys look at me like y'all never heard of Legos before. Y'all ever heard of Legos? No?
Yeah.
I guess you can go check it out at an amusement park, but anyway, go ahead and play Legos.
Well, that will be on today. Chris will bring Legos in tomorrow. We can make our own little stadium.
Build a new stadium with Legos.
Tomorrow on the show, we will visit with Tyson Maiva at 1:15. He is a San Diego native, starting middle linebacker, and also Nate Kreckman on This Week in the Mountain West. We'll get his take on what is going to happen between Boise State and San Diego State. That's tomorrow at 1. Caves and Prater coming up here at 3 on Sports Radio, The Ticket.
Sports Radio 93.1 FM and 1350 AM, The Ticket.